Good morning and welcome to Break the Case. I don't really know whether to just say morning or afternoon. We are right on the cusp. I have already done the morning review, but right in the middle of that morning review, there was breaking news because Savannah Guthrie's Today Show interview with Hoda came out. And wow, there's just too much information. I had to come on because there's just so much to discuss from an investigative lens and just so many epiphanies here. I did a tweet just now, but I just wanted to come out and do a quick show on all of this information. It's really remarkable. So first of all, you know, initial impressions, please have a box of Kleenex next to you if you're going to listen to this. It's very, very difficult. Savannah is raw. She's real, and it is heartbreaking to hear the pain and to see the pain in her face that she is going through when she's talking about this case. And I think the biggest reason that her pain is so raw and so real is she says on this interview that she believes she's responsible. Now, whether that's accurate or not, it doesn't really matter. It's her perception. She says she even asked her brother, Cameron, who's a fighter pilot, former military, a guy that's squared away. She always describes him as just so incredibly intelligent, which she also says about her sister, Annie. But she asked him, you know, do you think it could be me? And basically he responds in affirmative. So, you know, it makes almost my throat pucker up like when you eat a lemon. I remember that's how I felt almost every day when I would think about my mom and when I gave her eulogy. This is so hard on her, but I can't imagine how difficult it would be if you had some sense of responsibility. And of course, obviously, this isn't Savannah's fault. It's nobody's fault except the kidnappers and the perpetrators of this crime. No one else's fault. So, you know, she shouldn't hold herself responsible, but she does. And I think you can just hear that pour off the interview. I want to key on, though, the investigative nuggets that we got from this. So beyond looking back past that emotionalness, and then I'm going to end with one last emotional thing that really hit me. But beyond that, from an investigative lens, from an FBI lens, as far as Nancy, huge things came out in this interview. Number one, she was taken in her pajamas with no shoes. That's the first time we've heard those details. Why is that so incredibly important? Well, when you are whisked out like that, this means to me they likely did not spend that much time, and they also could have given a care less about Nancy Guthrie. Nothing about, I mean, she could have been screaming, begging. They could care less. I think this happened swiftly and quickly. I think that whole time frame is off because people just want to take the 41 minutes based on the 147, and then they want to subtract that from the 228 with the disconnection. And because of the camera that was outside that caught a figure at 212, I think that changes the whole timeline. And I will say, I was another one that was definitely looking at that until the 212 information came out. And I think that 212 information from law enforcement, from her own camera, really changed everything. And no longer, I just don't think we can think of them as being in that period of time. I think they snatched her, they grabbed her, they harmed her. I don't know from a stress standpoint as a tactical medic, I do not know if she could have even survived the initial looking up, seeing porch guy before her, standing over her bed, grabbing her, just the hyperperfusion that takes place when somebody is feeling so much stress like this. Stress, fear, this is what it causes the body to do. Hyperventilation, which causes difficulty in breathing. You combine that with typically low blood pressure or very high blood pressure, and then combined with your pulse rate going through the roof. So typically your blood pressure completely drops ultimately when you hypoperfuse. In other words, your blood just can't circulate to your heart and to your mind and to your lungs because of fear and stress. And we heard, the reason I'm going back to this is we heard Savannah discuss that her mom, for her to walk just short distances, would be in so much pain. And pain also causes those same reactions. When you're in pain, your pulse rate, you know, drives up, your respirations get heavier because you're suffering from pain. So now we have somebody who we know suffered from chronic serious pain when she would just walk. It was very difficult for her, who is being grabbed, the pain that that would cause. She's bleeding. Again, I'll show this room. She's trapped, which I mentioned from the beginning, absolutely trapped in a corner, no place to go, speed, surprise, violent of action, a gun. She would have been absolutely horrified. So anyway, that was another thing we heard for the first time. Secondarily, or in addition to, it's not second. In fact, I would say this, the first most important thing is that the ransom notes, at least two, Savannah Guthrie believes are real. And that makes sense to me because they came on television. They did all these appeals. Why did they do that? Because they thought it was real. What did the FBI say? He thought they were real. And I think that, you know, at least two of them, all those other ransom notes that, hey, listen, I know that the people have them and I can give you, if you give me money, I'll give you them. All that was fake. But I think she's referring to the very first two that TMZ brought up. I think there were six. She discounts the other four. Obviously, the ones that went to Tommy, which is how she refers to him, not Tommaso. Tommy and Annie, we know that those are not legitimate. Because that person was arrested. But I think the first two, and I know so many of us said, why would you go to the station? Why would you go and cause this pain and torment? So it really begs the question, if the ransom notes are real, again, I think what all of us said, were they real for money or were they just real to torment and torture Savannah and her family? Because again, they went to the media, so it could be splashed all over the media. That tells me they wanted the recognition. They wanted this to be out there, to be known. Wow. So just a huge epiphany there. In addition, and I have so many notes, but I just want to keep this short because I know I'm coming on at the last minute and breaking away from what I was doing, but I think this is really important. She says early on, this is big, very early on, they knew this was a kidnapping. She said her brother knew, based on his military training, just his background, who he is, that this was a kidnapping. Law enforcement knew. Law enforcement, Nano says he had homicide on the scene that day. I know he's floundered. You know, one minute he says that the reason they pulled away crime scene was because they didn't really know what they had. And then the next minute he says, we knew from the beginning it was a kidnapping, or we've known from the beginning the motive. And she says, Savannah says, and I believe Savannah. So the words that come out of Savannah's mouth, I'm believing. The word that comes out of Nano's mouth, I have very little regard for in terms of his floundering. He says whatever he needs to say. So you know, I can't give him a vote of confidence anymore. I used to always try to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I don't want to digress. This is all about Savannah and Savannah's message and what we learned. So nevertheless, very early on, they knew this was a kidnapping. Very early on, I mean, we saw her on screen. We saw those timelines that they gave. And then they never gave us the quid pro quo. In other words, if we don't get the money, then this is what's going to happen. But you see in the next one, she talks about essentially her mother not being with them. And then we see in between that Cameron going on and saying, listen, please tell us how to contact you. Please contact us, the family. I think the family would have paid. I think the family, they said they would have paid even for her remains. That's what they said. They just want to give her a burial. They want to know what happened. They need her to have closure. I think they're still willing to pay. But now these perpetrators are so scared. They do not want to get caught for this. They know they'll be facing the death penalty. They know it'll be a mess, and their lives will be completely lost if they come forward or anybody comes forward about them. So nevertheless, we know they knew early on. That's another major point. Another major point that she makes is about what it has done to them. And this isn't necessarily investigative, but it kind of is, because it says what Nanos wrote and what, quite frankly, myself and other normal people who are investigators, what we have all said, and anybody else and everybody who has maligned Tommy, now that I know he likes to be called that, Tommy and Annie and Savannah and Cameron, the family, totally off base. No, they are not involved. This isn't Tommaso. This isn't Annie. In fact, she talks so much about how the only reason at her age and with all of her health issues that Nancy was allowed to stay in her house, which she'd been at, I believe, again, since 1975, all her memories are there. All Savannah's memories are there, because she lived there since she was four. She shared about that. Their father, that house was equivalent to their father. You know, I get it. These homes become very important to them. My husband's mother was widowed, and she stayed in that house, never remarried. Reminds me a lot of ways of Nancy Guthrie, just sort of that vintage in that era. And that's all to say that I think many of us have grandparents that have been widowed, and this whole house held all the memories that she had created. So she felt very safe and very comfortable, and she wanted to stay there. And the reason she was able to was because of Annie and Tommaso, them coming over, them being around her, them being there, them caring for her. Savannah makes it crystal clear that they are not involved, which, for those of you who don't want to believe anything Nano says, he's spot on with that. And I always said, there is no way in my 28 years working a joint investigation that Nanos is going to put that out there without the FBI concurring with it. No possible way. So again, anybody who is watching, listening, that crap going out there about them being involved, it's just crap. And to hear her talk about that, she's speechless. She even says that. She says it's unbearable. Piles pain on pain. I will never understand it. You know, she basically just can't talk enough about her relationship that Nancy had with Tommy and also with Annie and the whole family. She, in fact, describes the relationship. I think she says they are one unit. I think if I look back at my notes, she says they're one unit. That's how close they all are. So anyway, hopefully that will all put to bed any of the horrible idiots. And hopefully you all stop watching and get on their channels and tell them to go pound sand. About Tommaso being involved, Tommy being involved. I guess he went by Tommy. We learned that. I want to talk about a couple of other things. That the camera, the Nest camera, was actually ripped from the wall. That's what she says. She uses those words, ripped from the wall. I think that's really important. Again, why? It talks to the lack of sophistication of this person. Listen, he's sophisticated enough to dodge the FBI and to dodge local law enforcement all this time. So I have to give him some credit. But we've always said the way that weapon was holstered, I mean, he wasn't a gangbanger. That was clear. He's not a cartel member. Could he be some peripheral part of a cartel or a cartel member? Wannabe cartels and bangers don't wear holsters. I mean, A to Z, this was not a legitimate cartel / gangbanger hit. This was something very different from that. And I'm not saying he's not sophisticated, but he yanked that stuff. I think a lot of us thought, well, perhaps he had tools and he undid it and he clipped wires. That's not what she says. She says ripped. And she said that's another reason they knew early on it was a kidnapping. So I think it's very important that detail is reemphasized. The other thing she talks about, okay, so she learns about it. Obviously, she's not there. She's with her children. Her husband had just gotten back from a tennis vacation, which was interesting that he's a big tennis player. And she gets on a plane and she comes out. But this is what's interesting. This, from a law enforcement standpoint, is interesting. That crime scene was not protected. Everybody was rolling in and out of this house, investigators, blah, 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 trampling the crime scene. She was trampling the crime scene. Everybody was trampling the crime scene, which ruins the crime scene. I'm just totally envisioning JonBenet Ramsey take two with people trampling in and out. Nobody cordoned it off. Nobody had a separate section with booties on for people to walk in. It would have been along an outside corridor typically, and only people with a need to be in there, with a need to know, like the people that are handling the crime scene investigation. That's all that needed to be in there. And the detective and the special agent. Oh, actually, an agent wasn't even involved then. Again, another Nanos talks out of this side, then goes to this side of his mouth. He initially said the FBI, well, he initially said only people, his people were involved Saturday night. You did not hear me wrong. That's what he said, Saturday night. Then he later says in an interview just recently with a local station, he says Sunday night. So again, another confusion. But the bottom line is the Bureau was not involved till later, although he says the Bureau was there Sunday night. That's what he says recently, even though later, you know, before he says he brings them in later once he definitely confirms it's a ransom. The bottom line is it is so horribly mishandled that even if they find the perpetrators, I don't know how they're going to succeed in adjudicating this. The crime scene is a hot train wreck. They were there. The Pima County did process it over a 20-hour period, but the Bureau went back and processed it, I think, 4 days later. Then the Bureau went back again to get the car and to get the cameras on the roof and who knows what else. And then later the septic search. The point is, this crime scene, you have one chance at it. Anybody on here, anyone who has ever conducted a crime scene or an investigation involving a crime scene, you got one chance. That's it. That's it. I literally can't think of a time I've returned to a crime scene. I was trying to think of a time. Something sticks in my mind earlier in my career where I begged my supervisor to go back, which I had to get another. I had to write. I do vaguely remember this, and I think he okayed me, and I think I did another search warrant. Sorry, it's been, you know, 20 plus years ago, and I did so many search warrants in so many cases, but I do vaguely remember, but I remember we had to start all over again with our search warrant to go back and look. This could be slightly different just because the family would have given permission. So we know that consent searches were done, for instance, at Annie and Tommaso's house, or Tommy's house. I'm going to call him by what he wants to be called. So we know that. But nevertheless, it's unheard of to go back all these times. It's just really unheard of, unless there's some significant change. And the fact that the entire crime scene would have been a hot mess anyway from everybody trampling it JonBenet style early on would have very much hurt their ability, no matter when they took DNA and fingerprints and everything else, would have hurt all of that. We know they didn't even take the French doormat, everybody. We beat that up. I want to get back to what she talked about. She verified that, though. all the people who were in there and things like that. So anyway, let's see. There were a couple other things that she particularly brought out that were from an investigative point of view. Oh, no meds. There's a lot of rumors circled around about a search warrant, and the search warrant was for meds. And so therefore she brought the meds. You know what? They didn't. She talks about that. And actually at the very beginning of the case, they talk about that. They said she cannot survive more than 24 hours, likely that her life would be in peril 24 hours without her medication. The pain, the blood thinners, she had a pacemaker, everything she would have been on to maintain her health, according to what they said early on, was that she wouldn't have had it. And then now Savannah Guthrie reinforces that and said she didn't have her medicine. So for everybody who speculated that the medicine was taken, medicine wasn't taken, Savannah reinforces that. All right. Let me see. All right. This is huge. Savannah thanks law enforcement. And she says, listen, they have worked so very hard on this, that they're devoted. And I'm telling you, from being in these situations, you don't sleep. You don't want to eat in the first days. You know how critical the first 24 to 48 hours is. You literally eat, breathe, sleep these cases. You don't go home. You work till you can't work anymore. Then you grab 3 or 4 hours and then you get back out there and pound the pavement and work the case again. I never went to a basketball game. I don't know anybody else who did. Sorry. I know that was a little bit of a jab. I'm just saying what it's like in the first stages of a case like this. And Savannah drives this home. She says, you know, that law enforcement has been great, but then she gets a very sobering look on her face, very serious. And she says, but you know what? We don't have any answers. That is a big piece of information. Still no answers. I think we know that out here, and I maintain this case is not cold, because the definition of cold and the definition of not having a pointer to a subject are two different things. Cold is when you have nothing to follow up on. Law enforcement has so much to follow up on. The 30,000 leads, think about that, everyone. Think about having one task a day. Do the dishes. Or how about this? Go grocery shopping. Think about 30,000 times you're supposed to go grocery shopping. It is so much that they have to follow up on, combined with all the video that's been turned in from Ring, from traffic lights, from traffic cams, from other neighbors up to, they kept it within a mile and a half away, but then we know there's been other video turned in 2 miles away. Nevertheless, this is absolutely drinking from a fire hose for investigators and for analysts. And it's so much to pour over. And that takes so much time, everyone. It hours you're sitting there. This is you watching everything that happens on that screen. Can't look away. When you do, you got to stop it to go to the bathroom, to take a bite, to take a call. And then you restart it again. That's what analysts in the Bureau are doing right now with video footage, starting with the video footage that would be most pertinent, right? You're really looking at a window of about 229, let's just say 228. And I would take it about an hour. And that's a lot. But you got to start with that earliest video footage, because no one knows exactly when he was there in advance. Although I thought it was very important that they put out, not only is the 11th important, but also Savannah says the 31st, the night of the 31st. Everybody's kind of blowing that off. Oh, the night of the 31st. Yeah, that's expected. Not really, because the night of the 31st is way different from the early morning hours of the 1st. In other words, did they do something smarter than Brian Koberger did and actually recon earlier that day? And is law enforcement looking for that? Do they have reason to believe that? So nevertheless, what Savannah tells us in this is law enforcement doesn't have a pointer. They have a lot of evidence, a lot of facts. I shouldn't call it evidence, a lot of key leads and interviews and a lot to go over, but they don't have a direction. Exactly what she says. We need answers. And I'm telling you, that's because they don't have answers. That was critical that she said that. I want to make sure I touch on the most important things, and that's to do with the investigation side of things. I just want to make sure I didn't miss any of that before I move to just a couple more points before I let you guys go. Let me see. I think I hit on them all. I just wanted to make sure I didn't miss anything. So to recap the investigative points, pajamas, no shoes, which tells us whisked away without any care at all for this woman, the brutality of it. We also know that a slew of people were in and out of this house, investigators, you know, I'm sure CBP with their dogs. We know we saw the shirt of hers that they used that they just threw on the bushes afterwards. All the people that were in and out of that house, she describes that or touches on that. I think that's really important to know. This crime scene was a hot mess even before the first time it was searched. And remember, there's been four searches. So crime scene issues that she discloses just in talking about all of this. The fact that two of those ransom notes they believe were real. And we say, when we say real, it's not that we think, us in law enforcement, that they were necessarily for money, because you don't send those to, and they came 3 days later, I believe, if I recall correctly, 3 days later. I'll have to look, 2 to 3 days later. It was after, well, afterwards, I think it was 3 days later. You don't do that if you really want ransom, but that begs the point. Did they know they couldn't get it? Because she was already gone. So for that reason, they're just now toying and being evil to this family and making sure everyone knows they're in control. Everyone knows they're in control of this narrative by doing it the way they did this. That was really important. I think it backed up the fact that they at least believe that they had particularly information to believe those notes were real. And they gave that to us, everyone. I do believe Nanos when he said early on in the case, that is the same direction they were going then is the same direction they believe now. Occam's razor, kidnapping gone horribly bad for ransom because of Savannah Guthrie. But how are they targeted? And I'm telling you, and I've lost a little bit of faith now because of this billboard thing. The FBI won't change all those other billboards to show Porch Guy. They won't do them in Spanish. They won't show the 2.1 million reasons why somebody should go forward. You know, I'm befuddled with that. Or put them in the Tucson area, going south out of the town. I just don't get it. You know, I've talked to every single person I cut this case up with. You look at any one that you see online that's former Bureau, that's former homicide, that you would respect, that's done the job for decades and decades and decades. They will tell you this needs to be done. And it makes me wonder if the Scottsdale case, that's similar in a lot of regards, you know, people out here, 8 in red, throwing a bone at 2 teenagers 6.5 hours away that are willing to commit a violent, brutal, sick act. In that case, they were 60-year-olds with a lot of money in a beautiful neighborhood in Scottsdale, 1.5 hours north of her, 1 day before her. You're telling me that this could not be organized where they're throwing bones out, possibly for people to snag onto and commit these types of crimes on the dark web or other places. Remember, these two individuals didn't know each other. It has to be investigated. And I pray that the FBI is looking into it. They got to be looking into it and figure out who Red and 8 are. I'm not saying that Red and 8 are behind this. And I'm not saying they're not. It has to be looked into. Could this, again, in other words, still targeted because of the money that they would understand she would have, possibly have had access to Savannah. And that's about, you know, that's one avenue, an organized type ring that would be throwing out these bones. I need to be watching it all around the country. I look periodically, but I really need to do a deep dive. Because this is how the Chilean crime ring started, that were ripping off Mahomes and were ripping off, Kelsey and many other sports figures and other figures. You know, you would think they'd have alarms. Well, they didn't set them. You'd think they'd lock the doors. Well, they didn't lock them. And these Chilean theft rings, and I talked all about this on Twitter a long time ago, and I did a show on them. You would think that these people, of all people, celebrities with all this money, would tighten down their houses, but they didn't, and they don't. And they knew that through their surveillance, their operations, probably inside information from maids and things, if it's similar to this case I worked in Westlake. And so you look at all of that and you say, could this be that? You got to consider that. The other piece is, and Cheryl McCullough, Mac, my buddy, is going to be on Monday, and I can't wait to talk to her. She's been out there. She came back. I can't wait to hear what she has to say. And she believes that this was more targeted for very personal and horrible reasons, just to make this family suffer, not really ever thinking they would get money, but that's why they went public and that's why they sent the notes, and everything was just a masterful plan to, I'm going to say it, kill their mother, to attack them 3 days later with these notes that would cause them severe pain, and to leave this like this for a personal reason, a personal vendetta. So Mac and I agree on what happened. We don't necessarily agree on the deep reason behind it happening. Although I'm about 10, I used to be about 50-50. I'm down to about 10% with Mac's idea, 10-20%. But nevertheless, I've always said planned kidnapping, abduction of Nancy Guthrie, the deep down motive beyond what happened, that will, it remains to be seen. And like the defense investigator we had on, who was fabulous, Monica Jordan, you can't follow her anything. She does it probably how I should have. I got talked into social media by my buddy Brian Enton, to be honest. He's like, you got to go on Twitter. He would wake me up in the middle of the night during Cabby Petito. Oh my gosh, did you see this? Oh my God. If you look back, it's hilarious. Like I'm hiding under the covers, like beside my bed, because my husband's in there. I'm going, what are you calling me about, Brian? That was our Gabby Petito relationship. It was so funny. But nevertheless, this case, it's going to be one of those two. First of all, this is a kidnapping, intentional to abduct/kill her. Because there is no way you think you're going to take an 84-year-old out of the house, leave her meds, have her be cold in the middle of the night, early morning, witching hours, and think she's going to survive this. I've talked about the perfusion and the issues with that, you know, why people, you know, hypoperfuse. In other words, they go into shock. That's kind of how everybody calls it. It's hyperperfusion. That's why one of the first things you do when you go to somebody, even though they don't have anything life-threatening, oftentimes you have to put them in a, make sure they're very, very warm, get them calmed, oftentimes administer Valium, because the mind, when it's scared, when it's in pain, goes in or causes the body to go into shock. for your respirations to elevate, for your, again, your pulse to go through the roof, which causes your blood pressure to fall, which causes you to lose consciousness, and you ultimately die of shock. And so anybody who took her, who knew her age, knew that this was a high probability. And this falls in line exactly with what Mac does say, that this was targeted. They never planned on money. For 3 days later, for them to ask for the money was, I think, just torturous. My question is, did they plan for her to die that early, or did they hope to have proof of life and then come back for the money, and they couldn't do that? But then that begs the question, why in the world didn't they work out a deal, because the Guthries were willing to pay for her remains? They were willing to do that. So anyway, and then, yeah, let's talk about this. It also could be, and I touched on this the last couple of times, and I touched on it very early, and I actually said I was going to do a whole show on this. I'm just trying to be so respectful. Is Nancy Guthrie's political views and her points of views were very strong. And we see it every day on Twitter. We see it every day, even sometimes in chats. People are vicious. Very vicious. And do they have the capability? I mean, I see threats all the time. Do they have capability to follow through with those threats? People who are angry at her anti-Trump position, angry at her anti-ICE position, angry at her more liberal views on life. We are in a crazy political climate right now, both sides. And the extremists on both sides, whether you're a liberal extremist or whether you're a conservative extremist, you know, both sides have been responsible for some horrific crimes. I actually was going to do a whole show on this. I did a small show on it, and I also talked about it on Twitter, but I really need to deep dive into the most recent crimes that actually focused on targeting those who are not Trump fans. And I really need to take a look at those. I am just so apolitical. I literally would have to do so much research, because that's not my jam. I consider crime apolitical, but it can't be overlooked that could that have been the reason? Could it have not have had anything to do with Savannah, although they would have known of Savannah's wealth? But could it have been strictly, because all you have to do is Google people to see what they're worth. Could it have literally been that reason? I don't think, I know we don't know that underlying, and I need to spend a lot of time on it to see where I can get to, because, you know, got to the Occam's razor early, and now it's been supported by Savannah. I want to talk really quickly about one fact that I didn't talk about, and that is the fact that the back door was propped open. I have some pictures because I wanted to talk about this. Let me see if this is the one. Yeah. So there's this door, right? And then there's this door. And then obviously it wouldn't have been a slider that wouldn't have been propped open. And then there's this door. Okay. This door, I know locksmiths worked on. We saw locksmiths went there. We saw that locksmiths, there was a plate that went back to the locksmiths. And so we know they were there. Plus we saw them. Oh, I think I have a picture of them right here. Right here. That's one of them right there. And we know that they worked on this door. I don't know if they worked on this door. I don't have any pictures of that. We know a door was propped open. That, again, just leads to, and I know, unless she's changed her view with all the new facts that have come out, Cheryl McCollum thinks there's only one perpetrator. I think there's at least two, and maybe more, based on the walkie-talkie I see in the pocket that's not a jammer, based on the fact that I don't think a car would have been sitting there. I think a car would have been summoned to come around. Based on the fact now, we've got a new fact that the door was propped open. I don't think that was propped open by Nancy. Nancy knew of javelinas and wildlife. That's why she had her Nest camera. But could the bad guys have propped that open to let other bad guys in? That's possible. And then they just didn't do anything afterwards. I want to end on this, and I wanted to again drive home the fact the family is not responsible for this, and people who keep saying they are, it's just horrible. The thing I wanted to talk about, and this isn't FBI-ish. I like to stick with facts and FBI stuff, but obviously I had Julie on yesterday and we had a ball. But I wanted to talk about this. And that is something Savannah Guthrie said in part two. And I put them both on my Twitter so that you guys can see everything that was said. You're going to hear from people like me and many other people about their impressions about what, sorry, I want to get this picture up. You're going to see very many impressions about what all of this means. I'm going to be on News Nation tonight to talk about it. Other people with homicide and investigative backgrounds are going to talk a lot about that. Some of us may say a lot of the same things. In fact, every panel I'm on, none of us ever disagree for the most part. We might disagree about motive, but we don't disagree usually about the details. And I wanted to put those up so you all can make your own. So if you go to my at CoffinDow for FBI, you're going to quickly see, you can just press on it and you're going to get to see her interview. It's two parts and there's one coming out tomorrow, but there's two parts from today and it's only about a half an hour to 40 minutes of your time if you're following the case. I just wanted to make it easy for everybody to find. But I want to say this in closing, and I'm going to share something. Savannah says that when she was sort of at her lowest point, she says that she was praying to God, and put that back up. She was praying to God about all this at her lowest point. And for those of you who have lost a mom, you can relate to this. And at her lowest point, you know, when she's just basically saying, God, how can I go on without knowing where she is? And she says that God spoke to her and said, she's right here. And that gave Savannah some amount of comfort and knowledge. And for those of you who are out there, and I know I don't talk a lot about my faith, but like Savannah, my faith is the most important thing in my life. Yes, my family is a very close second. But God is the most important thing. And for those of you who understand this faith, and you know, I have a son right now that is struggling with his faith, even though he's been raised up, he's a confirmed Catholic. He's, you know, we pray before we eat every single meal. We go to church, we do all these things, but church and all of that, all those are rituals that I just said, unless you're really praying deep from your heart, right? Anyway, there's a lot of people who, though, may know what I'm talking about, and you've had moments in your life where God has either talked to you or God has otherwise something has happened to save you something. I'm sure all of you know what I'm talking about. And I always try to talk to, and when I used to teach basically catechism, conversion to Catholicism, which took 2 years, these classes to teens. That's who I taught. I taught both of my older children. I did not teach my younger son, but I taught both of my older children in class. They were in the class that I taught. And one of the things I always talked about, because so many people are in there for their parents. And I always said, listen, if your parents are forcing you or you're in here for that, it's fine. But, you know, just keep your eye open, your mind open. I'm just so glad you're here. And, but there's these faith moments for those who have been fortunate enough to have them. And I just want to share this quick moment. When I lost my mother in, I'm going to keep my picture very small here. When I lost my mother in 2001, and I had just had my daughter, thankfully, I was really struggling. She died October 2nd. I was really struggling. And she died when she was 60. I'd have to go back to the exact year, but right, I think she was 60, 61. And, you know, mothers, especially when they're very involved in your life and raising you and everything, it's really hard for those of you who have lost your mom. It's really hard. And because they do everything for you, right, when you're young and growing up. And I remember being in bed, and I just thought, I was having trouble dealing with it. And I was asleep, but I woke up and I saw an outline of my mom in her white nightie. Like, she had one of those old nighties, like you see with like Little House on the Prairie almost. That's what she was dressed in. That's what she was dressed in, this old looking white nightie. And she stood at the end of my bed and she just said these words, "I'm home." And in her eulogy that I had given when she passed, I wrote a poem for her. I love to write poetry. And I wrote a poem for her. And in it, I referenced home, that I hoped she was home. And anyway, with a beaming smile and not at all stressed or belabored, she just said, "I'm home." And I remember saying, "Honey," I remember telling my husband, "Dad, you know, did you see this? Are you hearing this?" And of course, he's like, "What? What's going on?" And from that moment on, for me, I was able to really, really get through the pain, the loss, the regret, because you always have, I think, some regrets. Like with Savannah, she's saying, you know, she feels guilty, but I think could a lot of that also be she lived in New York, you know, her career, how little time they got to spend together compared to Annie, who lived 10 minutes away, right? And you always have that. So anyway, not to be too heavy on this afternoon, and I know we need to get going on. I'm not even doing a live when I normally do one. But I just wanted to pass that along and say that Savannah speaks about what happened in her life, and I could so relate because that happened in mine. And for me, it definitely wasn't God. Like, I think God intervened, but it was my mom that said that. And in Savannah's case, it was God, she felt, came down and said that. Probably going to have black underneath my eyes, which is really going to suck. So anyway, I just wanted to pass that on as the end note. Have your Kleenex out when you go and watch her, because she's very moving. It's very sad. But pick up on, hopefully, some of these investigative clues, because she gave out a lot. And I think the most disappointing one is she has no answers and law enforcement has no answers. And I believe that. I believe they have a lot of leads, but I don't believe they have a pointer toward answers. Let's see. Yes, I'm doing well, Ann Hinkle. Alan Hinkle, I'm sorry. Alan, thanks for being on here. I love Alan. He's great. He and I go way back to the Gabby Petito days. I'm doing fantastic, by the way. I'm just a little overworked right now. That'll change after the first. I have a huge court deadline. After that, I'm going to be, the first week, so into the second week, I'm going to be smooth sailing. But anyway, for all of you who came in completely last minute, because I threw this up like that, I just had to, once I finished with my media interviews this morning and got everything written down in a book, I wanted to come to you all with the reflections from an investigative standpoint and then also from a heartfelt standpoint. Hopefully, you know, there'll be answers someday. It's going to take a while. Everyone, until next time, thanks for joining me. May justice be served.